Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. This is the show where we question everything. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on tonight's show, we've got a busy, busy broadcast for you. We're going to be looking at the confirmation now across the border that the plan to come into the United States is not just to find a better life. It is, in fact, being used to change America's election. So we're going to show you the viral piece of paper that has gone viral this afternoon and confirmation south of the border as to how that's actually being used to upend our elections in the United States.
Plus, how does the U.S. square shooting down missiles for Israel, but not Ukraine? John Kirby has an explanation. Basically, he says they're just different. It's just different.
Just different.
Yeah. We're going to look at how this has Zelensky green with envy. What is Ukraine going to do about it? What could they have done a long time ago? We're going to look at that.
We're also going to talk about Klaus Schwab. There's been a lot of rumors circulating as to the life of Klaus Schwab. Rushed to a hospital. Is he alive? Is he dead? But even beyond just what's going on with Klaus Schwab, is he dead? We'll tell you in just a few moments on all of that. But where is the succession plan for the World Economic Forum? Who is going to take over at the World Economic Forum? There's quite a bit of infighting right now. Who's going to rule the world when Klaus Schwab actually does die? We'll talk about all of that. And we're also going to talk about Canada's hate science, perhaps moving now from Canada, but into the United States.
Yes. In fact, it has been published in a U.S. journal. The same hate scientist has decided, hey, I'm going to export this because Americans seem to like it. And an American academic journal has, in fact, picked it up. We're going to talk to the woman who is critical of the FISMN study and ask her, what does this mean? What are they trying to export? What are they trying to sell us? What could they be mandating on us in the next pandemic? So it's a busy show. Hold on to your butts.
That's right. So, but first, let's get into a little bit of a news roundup on some stories that we're watching right now and developing over the past few hours. So we're, of course, watching what's going to happen between Iran and Israel, and the latest report from U.S. officials, at least as a few short hours ago, is that they report they expect a strike to likely take place on Saturday. I like that they're just like, we're going to ruin everyone's weekend. That's when NBC News is saying this is going to happen. It's going to happen on Saturday.
Can you give me a calendar invite so I clear my calendar?
Yeah, clear your calendar, because apparently it's going to be, though, of limited scope, according to NBC News. We don't know if this is true or not. The source says it's likely the retaliatory strikes will occur on Iranian proxies situated outside of Iran. Reports that Iran tonight have released a video saying we've been waiting for years for this. We are prepared for this. If they attack us, we will fight fire with fire. And if we fight any escalation that hits Iran, according to Iranian officials, we're not going to wait. We're not going to wait 12 days like we did last time. It will be an immediate response. So back and forth, back and forth. This is World War III by all accounts, because as the United States are saying, we're not going to get involved. We're going to sit on the sidelines. We're not going to be involved. But then why were they just involved 2 days ago? Mm-hmm. Why, 3 days ago? Why in the world would they be involved shooting down drones, trying and missing to take down hypersonic missiles? And
we're not
going to
get involved.
But we're not going to get involved.
Again.
Right. This time we really mean it.
Yeah. This time we mean it. Well, two or three more times you attack Iran, we're out of here.
Right. As if Biden's really there focused on, whatever deep state puppets are running the show.
And if there is any world power capable of shooting down all missiles, why don't we just always do that, right? The vision comes to mind of Superman. Like, if we could just have somebody always shooting down the missiles, that would be great. Then we don't have any more war.
Yeah.
The U.S. jobs?
To save a little money, perhaps we could just stop firing the missiles to begin with.
We just stop it.
And then you don't need to have them shot down.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
That's a thought.
Got that, Mr. Luthor?
Also, we're following this Julian Assange story. This is a big story, and we want to get to this.
Right. So Stella Assange, the wife and lawyer of Julian Assange, has now posted this, because today was the deadline for the United States government to issue assurances to the United Kingdom government that they would treat Julian Assange well, which is a laughable premise. So when Assange appealed his extradition to the United States in February, the court said, well, maybe you can appeal it, but we want to give the U.S. government the opportunity to assure us that you'll be well treated if we basically approve this extradition. You know why this is hilarious? Is because the United States government has admitted that, yes, we tried to assassinate Julian Assange. We want him, though, and we will treat him well. We tried to kill him before, but this time we're going to treat him nicely. He's going to have a fair trial. Stella Assange posted this. She says the United States has issued a non-assurance in relationship to the First Amendment and a standard assurance in relation to the death penalty. What is that standard assurance? Not sure. It means no undertaking to withdraw the prosecution's previous assertion that Julian has no First Amendment rights because he's not a U.S. citizen. Instead, the U.S. has limited itself to blatant weasel words, claiming that Julian can seek to raise the First Amendment if extradited. This diplomatic note does nothing to relieve our family's extreme distress about his future, his grim expectation of spending the rest of his life in isolation in U.S. prison for publishing award-winning journalism. The Biden administration must drop this dangerous prosecution before it's too late. Now, were there any words that would ever make her feel better about the murderous U.S. government that did admit to trying to kill him? What could they say? Like, hey, we got him a room at the Ritz. He's got first-class ticket. He's going to have, you know, he's going to have great security. No, obviously, there was nothing the U.S. government could ever say that would make her feel safe about this extradition. So now it's to the U.K. courts to see, do they buy this load of garbage? So we're all on tinderhooks.
We're going to follow that story. We're also following the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Will he resign or not? Why would he resign? Well, because you had Thomas Massie just a short time ago, Congressman Thomas Massie, friend of the show, one of the bravest members of Congress, just stood up in front of the Speaker of the House and said to him, quote, "I just told Mike Johnson in conference that I'm co-sponsoring the motion to vacate that was introduced by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. He should pre-announce his resignation, as John Boehner did, so we can pick a new speaker without ever being a GOP speaker." Unbelievable. Of course, this all comes down. He says there's multiple straws that broke the camel's back on this. They want this guy out of here. They want Speaker Johnson gone. FISA, though, is the biggest issue right now. As you had Representative Luna, of course, put forth a motion to stop that in its tracks today to vote on it. He went around that and allowed it to move forward. And then, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene now saying enough is enough. Thomas Massie saying enough is enough. Will you resign? He says he's not resigning, but we will see.
You know why he's not resigning is because he's got another Ukraine package to put on the floor, he has said he absolutely wants to do, even though he had signaled before he was in that position that he would pump the brakes on aid to Ukraine. That seems to be his number one priority, not American safety, not any interest of Americans at all.
So Speaker Johnson,
he hasn't done.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
I was gonna say he made the big promise that he was going to release all the J6 footage too, but then he released a little bit. Then he said now they have to go through and blur all the faces. So he hasn't done a single thing that I've seen that he promised he was going to do to get that position.
No. You know, it's funny too, because today flip-flop. I was going back over the media that told us when he got that job, he has no enemies. He's a principled person. Everyone who knows him likes him. He always follows through on what he says he's going to do. So, is this a bot? Is this bot Speaker Johnson? What do they have on him? Has he been shown the other side and seen that he cannot do that anymore when he's a leadership position? Is there darker forces at hand? It's terrifying to think how someone could flip-flop like this in a short amount of time.
Well, and I'm surprised Representative Matt Gaetz is kind of quiet on this. I mean, remember, the reason that we have Speaker Johnson in the first place is because Matt Gaetz effectively got rid of Kevin McCarthy, right? So the reason we have him in the first place is because of Matt Gaetz, and now Matt Gaetz is kind of quiet on this. And just going over his tweets over the past few hours on this, he's just been pretty quiet on this. He has been talking about FISA and so, but he is of course saying that he's deeply disappointed that 86 Republicans voted with Democrats. But I'm surprised he hasn't been a louder voice on this. But unless he has been, maybe I've missed it on Speaker Johnson. But anyway, we're watching all of this very closely because the Senate is about to take up the FISA bill this week. And as Edward Snowden said, this is a red alert of the highest magnitude, that the NSA will now be able to control the internet. That is essentially what Edward Snowden is saying about this FISA legislation. So That's a huge story we'll be following. The other huge story we're going to be following is the tens of thousands of illegal aliens pouring across the U.S. southern border and being handed papers, according to sources from Muckraker, saying, here's what you do when you get across the border. Here's how you vote for Joe Biden. We're going to show you those papers. We're going to show you the amazing reporting on that in just a second. But first, tonight's show is brought to you by our friends over at FastGrowingTrees.com. Right now is the perfect time to plant a tree. Go to FastGrowingTrees.com/redacted. Get 15% off when you use the code redacted. I love these guys. We planted a beautiful Japanese maple right in our front yard. My mother-in-law also planted one up in Boise, Idaho, delivered right to her front door. You just come beautiful packaging. You don't have to worry about soil getting all over the back of your trunk of your car and all that stuff. Perfectly cared for trees based on your region and zip code. So they're not going to send you a palm tree if you live in Montana. You can try it, but it probably won't last very long. So they're going to find region-specific plants that are going to last very, very long, and they're going to be highly cared for, delivered right to your door. You're going to get 15% off right now. Perfect time of the year. April is the best time, and, of course, October, to plant trees right now before it gets too hot, and they can take hold and be beautiful all year long. FastGrowingTrees.com is the place to go. FastGrowingTrees.com/redacted to get 15% off for a limited time, and plus you're going to buy one, you'll get one free also. For a limited time, if you want to get a new box hedge or something else for your yard, do it right now. FastGrowingTrees.com/redacted. Well, how is President Biden going to win the election in 2024? Is it with a robust economy? No. Surging inflation numbers once again just out, showing Americans are struggling and those prices are going to continue higher. Americans are feeling the pain at the pump. We've got a disaster unfolding in the Middle East. President Biden has the lowest approval rating of any president in modern history. But there is one way that they could win this election. And up until now, it really seemed like a conspiracy theory. Here's an idea. Have the borders be wide open and have millions of illegal aliens come across the border and then vote for President Biden. Right? It sounds ridiculous. Couldn't possibly happen, except that it is. And our next guest, Anthony Rubin from Muckraker.com, was literally handed the documents at one of these shadowy non-governmental organizations south of the border that has ties to Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. It really sounds like something out of a spy novel, but it's true. So this document, Anthony is going to break it down for us and explain exactly what these illegal aliens are being told to do once they cross the border. Anthony, thanks for joining us here on the show. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Clayton. It's always a pleasure and an honor. This document that was just broken today, it was a joint release by the Heritage Oversight Project and Muckraker.com. First of all, this document was found in Matamoros, okay? And apparently, it's being distributed by the Matamoros Resource Center. That's like right over the port of entry from Brownsville. You cross over from Brownsville, and this is, you know, literally like a two-minute walk from the border. And it says in the document, it says in the bottom of this flyer, something along the lines of, be sure to vote for President Biden when you reach the United States so we can stay open for another 4 years. And apparently now there's pushback. People are coming out and they're saying that it's a fake, that this is some sort of fabrication, or that, you know, they're not a part of this. I don't really know how that's possible, because the document that we obtained was actually obtained from within their office. Okay, number one.
That's inconvenient. So now they're like, oh no, this is fake. No, you literally got it from inside of their own offices.
Unless somebody, listen, I'm going to say only the facts, only what I know. Maybe there was some elaborate setup that somebody wanted to frame her and they placed it there in their office. And that's what this was all about. But that wasn't the only place that it was found. There's a camp, an illegal alien camp, right next to this place, the Matamoros Resource Center. And when I say next to, I mean literally a one-minute walk. You walk over to this camp. And this is included in the Twitter thread where this was released. In the porta-potties of this camp, this flyer was hung up inside of the porta-potties. So again, unless this was some elaborate setup where they were trying to frame this woman, Gabrielle, who runs this organization, and they went and they hung up these flyers. Yeah, I don't know what to say, but that, you know, it has her name on it, it has a number on the bottom, and it says the information that I just mentioned to you.
Yeah, it says, and I'll read it exactly. It says, reminder to vote for President Biden when you are in the United States. We need another 4 years of his term to stay open. The RCM, the Resource Center in Matamoros. Now, this is tied to, of course, this has a little, you know, shady history as it relates to the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, and Hayes, which is the Hebrew, I forget the full name of, it's the Hebrew something, something, something. Say that again?
The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society.
Right, which, of course, has been exposed now as also handing out maps and information to help and guide these individuals as they come across the border into the United States. Once that was exposed, they've removed some of the maps. And, of course, then they tried to do a smear campaign in the New York Times against journalists who have been trying to cover this and expose this. But can you explain the highest connection to this NGO handing out these documents telling people to vote for Biden?
Yeah, so the only connection there, basically what it is this small little building. It's not even an office building. It's just this little, you know, two-story, you know, complex. And, you know, apparently in that complex, there's a Hayes office there. And that's what's mentioned in that that document. You can see Hayes, and it says that, you know, there's a Hayes office here. But yeah, Hayes is, listen, assuming this isn't some elaborate setup, right? And this document is 100% legitimate, which I believe it to be, then that would have to mean, I mean, as far as I could see, that there is no way that people that were working at Hayes in this center did not know about these flyers, right? I mean, right. How could you not know? Just so everybody's aware, the way that we were originally tipped off to this, it wasn't like we were just in this camp and we found these flyers. We actually were tipped off to this by a source in New York. We have a source that's working inside some of these hotels in New York. And he calls us up one day and he says, hey, I have an illegal alien that I just spoke to who showed me a picture of a flyer that he got from Matamoros that says to vote for Biden. And so that means that this illegal alien that's in New York now, probably released onto the streets, probably never going to be found again, but that's not the point. This illegal alien had encountered these same flyers and allegedly was handed to them by this organization, right? So now maybe he's in on the conspiracy too, if it's a hoax. But so my point is that in saying all this, as far as Hayes is concerned, they're in the same office building, and I don't see any way that these workers in Hayes would not know about these flyers. Speculation,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it makes sense. And RCM, we should be clear, RCM, according to the Open Oversight Project, says RCM bills itself as an operation which houses functions for the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, Hayes, which helps illegal aliens enter the United States. Secretary Mayorkas, of course, is a former board member of Hayes, which received a number of grants from the Soros Open Society Foundation over the years. And as they're handed these documents, they, of course, then are guided to come into the United States, given safe passage, given refuge, and all of these different NGO-backed hotels and different places around the United States. So how does one then go from that, given handed a flyer, please vote for Biden, to actually voting for Biden? Like, what would the process look like, do you know, for one of these illegal aliens to actually obtain a way to vote in certain areas, certain states? Because we know that they can in certain areas.
Well, that would definitely depend on the state. But in some states, you can go and you can actually register to vote. And the only thing that you have to do is, you know, before you actually submit your registration, you basically just have to swear. You have to check a couple boxes and you have to swear. You're basically taking an oath that you are an American citizen. And of course, if they find out that you're not an American citizen and you registered, you're supposed to be prosecuted, and it's a serious, you know, it's a serious crime to do so. But that's what it is. But the point is, you can be an illegal alien and register to vote and just swear that you're an American citizen. It's as easy as that. Now, after you submit that registration, are there some checks, you know, before the election to see, you know, is this a legitimate person on our, you know, in our voter base that should be allowed to vote? They definitely do some checks, but you know, it's on record that in previous elections, there have been thousands of illegal aliens. I personally believe the numbers to be underreported that have voted in our elections. But, you know, they write it off as a fringe conspiracy theory and they say that it's inconsequential. But, you know, if this is actually that's I was reading something from the AP that said it was a conspiracy theory today. And, you know, if this document appears to be 100% legitimate, is legitimate, this is smoking gun evidence that they're funneling these people into our country and trying to, you know, sway the outcome of elections, which we've known all along, but now we have an actual serious hardcore piece of evidence to prove it.
Right. As you point out, you don't have to be a citizen. You just have to swear that you are. And then you're able to go and vote. And to your point, like the idea that it's millions of individuals voting, we don't know that. But all it takes is thousands or even hundreds in certain districts to completely sway and tip an election in favor. And if you have areas, as we highlighted recently here on the show, in Tennessee, and of course in other areas, where if you can tip certain districts in favor, then you can entirely sway in the entire election. So it doesn't take millions. It just takes a few thousand, right?
100%. For all the people on the left that continue to talk about, oh, it's a grave threat to our democracy, Donald Trump. I mean, if you care so much about democracy, which I don't even like that word, we're a republic, but if you care so much about democracy, well, then you should be concerned about this. So, you know, let's see what people on the left-hand side of the spectrum have to say about this report.
One of the other things I'll get you out of here on this, Anthony, which is that according to Judicial Watch, that Secretary Mayorkas himself recently met with some of these entities, these NGOs, including Team Brownsville, Angry Tias, and Abuelas. So he's routinely meeting with these NGOs, which are helping to facilitate this illegal flood of immigrants across the border. And of course, he spoke in front of the House last week and said, nothing to see here. The border is secure. Our main focus is border security in the United States, protecting the sanctity of the United States border. What do you make of that? I mean, did you laugh when he said that? What was your response?
Well, I mean, it's really a joke. We are truly living in, you know, Orwellian times here. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that, you know, lies are truth at this point. You know what I mean? War is peace. These are literally the times that we live in. And so when I hear this, basically anything this man says, I mean, it should be treated as a joke. It should be laughed at. And the man is a treasonous entity. As far as I'm concerned, he has, you know, allowed this country to be invaded, not only by people that may otherwise be, you know, not looking to cause America any direct harm, but certainly tens of thousands of people who are looking to cause America direct harm. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's treasonous. The man should be in prison, really, in my opinion. But no, I don't take his comments very seriously at all.
I said I was going to get you out of here a second ago, but I'll get you out of here on this. When you look at what's happening right now with the flood of illegal immigrants coming across the border and your reporting over the past couple of years here on this story, do you see the United States government, when you look at people on the right who want to stand up and sort of support protecting the United States borders, and then you see people on the left, there seems to be a coordinated effort, of course, between these two entities, the right and the left. There's very few voices who are standing up and calling for us to close the border. Do you think that we are, as we head into this election year, going to see a border closure over the next couple of months? What's your sense of what you're seeing, the flow of immigrants coming across?
I think that that is a very good question to ask. I saw on the news the other day that there was some question, could, you know, Biden unilaterally decide to close down the border if he so chose to do so? And, right. I think that they may try to do something like that, right? And then during the debates, if they even have debates, then Joe Biden can say, well, you know, border crossings are actually at a record low. They're lower than when you were president or some nonsense like that, right? So maybe they'll try to shut it down. I mean, everybody knows that it's a horrible, horrible situation, probably the biggest crisis facing America. I think it's a bigger crisis than a U.S. dollar collapse, which is also coming. And the reason why is because, you know, at least if we had just a bunch of sovereign citizens, you know, red-blooded, 100% American citizens in this country that all back the Republic and the dollar collapse, well, we could come back from that. But I don't even know how you come back from this without some sort of, you know, totalitarian system where you round these people up and ship them back to their country. I mean, that system scares me. So the point is, it's a massive crisis. And obviously, for political reasons, I think they're going to try to do something about it leading up to the election. And I think, God forbid, Joe Biden is put in office again, I think they're going to, you know, just open it back up and crank it to hyperdrive. Because again, as I've said in past interviews, I'll continue to say, this is part, and everyone needs to understand, this is not you know, lack of understanding of the situation. This is not just a mistake and they don't know what's going on. This is part of a larger geopolitical agenda. This is Agenda 2030. This is about dissolving the United States as an idea, as a nation state, and ushering in basically the rise of a new globalist era where countries, the United States, will just be essentially an economic zone with a flag.
So yeah, exactly right. You know, you mentioned this hoax idea. I'm just circling this through my brain here. Why would it be a hoax? And what would the goal be of a hoax? someone on the left going down there, putting up flyers in porta potties in order to do what? Like, what would the end goal of this hoax be? Can you help unpack that before you go?
Well, I'm thinking the same thing. I mean, I literally just had a call before I got on the line with you here with somebody calling me up, or, you know, an important person calling me up and saying, hey, we're getting, you know, claims that this is actually a hoax. You know,
from a lawyer calling or something like that. Right. I mean, like,
exactly. Yeah. Being like, hey, what information do we have about this? And I'm like, well, it was literally, the document was literally snatched from inside their office. But if it was a hoax, you know, then this person that's on the bottom of the letter, you know, the Matamoros Resource Center must have some very sophisticated enemies who are going out and planting flyers in their name. And you're waiting for somebody to find them. I guess that could be the only thing I could think of.
For what purpose? You know, like, it's like I could see someone going up to someone who has a Trump sign in their yard, removing it and placing a Biden sign. Like, there's a clear purpose for that, right? You're trying to, but I just can't wrap my head around what the purpose would be to hoax something like this and put it up in porta potties and hand it out to people that wind up in New York City. Like, it's an elaborate hoax. Anthony Rubin, great reporting on this. Again, the team at Muckraker were the ones to break this story wide open and actually get the flyers right out of the offices in south of the border down there. Anthony, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you so much, Clayton. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony. Yeah, and we reached out, by the way, I mean, we reached out today as well to RCM, NGO south of the border, to verify. They have not gotten back to us. They're not answering their phones, and they're not answering emails. I think there's a lot of scrambling going on right now. Dawn here in our chat, Dawn Thomas, thank you for your chat a moment ago. Dawn says, redacted, could you produce a picture showing the path that these immigrants are taking, illegal aliens? Who, what, where, when? This is obviously organized, but it's complex. Can you break it down? That's a great idea, Dawn. We should do that. In fact, we're going to be working on some bigger...
Maybe JJ could do that.
Right? I was just about to say, yeah, JJ is going to be joining us. JJ Carroll, of course, former Border and Customs and Border Patrol, 24-year veteran, is at the border. He's going to be doing some special stuff for us here on Redacted. We're excited to do that. And so we're going to be focusing on specific points of entry. I mean, just one example, just the other day, literally on the beaches of California, people are walking down the beach, walking their dogs. Suddenly a boat just like comes right up into the sand, and about 20 illegal aliens jump out and run right into the town, mm-hmm. Right off of a boat. This is happening on those pangolas all the time. Those inflatable ships landing as well, right there in San Diego. And so, not only in San Diego, but across all of these different points of entry, we can talk about. So, yeah. Great point.
And you know, it's great to learn from those people, because when you read JJ's book, you get the sense that I don't understand this at all. The media does not give us a clear picture. He paints a picture of just apocalyptic hell. And so, it's great to get people who've actually been there instead of just, you know, running your mouth about what you see on the news.
We've got more news to get to here in a moment. We're going to talk about Zelensky and Ukraine. Why are they so upset right now at the United States? They, of course, watched what unfolded over the past few days, us helping Israel shoot down as many drones as possible. And Zelensky is like, what about me? We'll get to that in a second. Plus, what about Klaus Schwab? Lots of rumors swirling that he was rushed to the hospital. Now the World Economic Forum is responding. We'll tell you what they said, but there's a bigger story going on here with Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. What's next for the WEF? We'll get to that.
Plus, we're going to talk about Canadian hate science. It has migrated down to the United States. Guess what? They're going to use that to put you in lockdowns and make you get vaccines every 24 months. That's what the new modeling says that you must do, because Canada will no longer publish this totally crap paper. It's now been published in the U.S. What do you think your lawmakers are going to do with that? We're going to talk to author Regina Watil about that in just a second. Now, before we talk about Ukraine, I want to tell you about our friends over at Ramp, because, okay, tax day just came. That was fantastic, right? But did you think, well, my finances are not as organized as I wish that they were? Well, how about you use Ramp, and then you can organize your finances better? And then at this time next year, tax time is going to be a simple, easy breeze. You're going to love it if you have a great finance software. Because if your finance software doesn't cut it, then you should get the latest and greatest. But Ramp is made for consumers so that you don't have to be an accounting specialist to keep your accounting up and running. Ramp gives finance teams unprecedented control and insight into a company's spend. So if you're using it to run your company, even better, with Ramp, you're able to issue credit cards to every employee with limits and restrictions and automate expense reporting. So you can stop wasting time on expense reports every month. They automatically collect receipts and categorize your expenses in real time so that you don't have to. You'll never have to chase down a receipt again, and all your employees won't spend hours submitting expense reports, or you don't have to ask for a receipt like sometimes I do with Clayton. Clayton, where's the receipt to this thing that's on the Amex? I don't know. Go find it. And then we get in an argument. Well, with Ramp, we don't have to do that. They also save you money because they, again, what you measure grows, right? So right now you can, you get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/redacted. That's Ramp, ramp.com/redacted, and check them out. Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of the FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. Once again, that's ramp.com/redacted. And I love talking about finance software because I'm a nerd.
Yes.
And that gets me excited.
I go in her office, there's always a spreadsheet on the screen. So.
Yeah. And I have to share it with Clayton in view only, because if he messes up my formulas, I go bonkers.
Real quick, before we get to Ukraine, I mean, this Donald Trump trial stuff is just crazy because, now we're seeing that they're going to try to push him to. They actually had an expert on because apparently he fell asleep.
Which trial are we talking about now? The hush money.
The hush money trial.
Got it.
So apparently he fell asleep again, according to reports. I don't know if that's confirmed or not, but apparently then I think CNN had on television a sleep expert to analyze Trump's nap during the trial. Like this is the American media right now.
That's so interesting. Did they do that for all the times that Joe Biden was asleep or looks completely incoherent?
No, this is amazing that they've got a sleep expert.
I did see a Reddit post today of like just several consecutive photos of people in Congress sleeping.
Yeah.
Like while stuff was going on. There's like one point where they got like three senators just right next to each other and all three of them are asleep. I guess that's what happens when we just keep electing 80-year-olds to run things.
Well, there's a famous story, a famous photo of Princess Diana also in some parliamentary meeting asleep. And she didn't even live past her 30s.
That would be the perfect time to catch up on sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to these yahoos. Anyway.
Well, don't sleep through this next segment
because
I want to tell you
this
about
is a big
Ukraine.
Story.
All right. Well, Ukrainian President Zelensky is a green monster of envy over Israel because the U.S. helped Israel intercept Iranian drones. And it has never done that for Ukraine since the conflict with Russia began in 2022. Zelensky is so desperate to get our attention because his media darling status has been revoked. He's wondering, where'd all the cameras go? Who turned off the lights? Why is nobody here? Every time I talk, they used to listen. What happened?
Where is an entire generation of Ukrainian men? Oh, they're all dead, thanks to me.
Not just that, though, but Vogue was just here. They wanted, CNN was my best friend. I could get on any award show I wanted.
Yeah, it was on the Academy Awards.
I had red carpets wherever I went. They thought that I was Churchill. Where'd they go? What happened?
Penn was giving him awards.
Yeah.
He didn't win.
What's
right?
That must be very upsetting to a narcissist. And now with the U.S. actually helping Israel, he feels like chopped liver. This is the Washington Post over the weekend. He is saying, Zelensky, you shot down missiles for Israel. I thought you loved me. Why haven't you done that for me? I was your boy, Joe Biden. I thought we were bros. I've made this reference before, and I have to make it again, because every time I see this desperate Zelensky, I think of this Friends clip where Monica is in the boys' apartment and no one wants to go and visit her house, so she bakes fresh cookies. So in this Friends reference that I cannot help myself but make, Zelensky is Monica.
I don't know, but it smells good.
Hot from the oven.
Ooh.
Please have some.
Only the cookies are bombs.
Right.
So So he's got these fresh cookies in a fan, like, come over here, come to me. I have the sexier war.
I'll give you all of our land. Oh, wait, I already did that to BlackRock and Vanguard. What do we have left? What can we give? Oh, how about the wombs of our women, which we're now giving away.
It would be hilarious, right?
Because Russia's right there, and you know we hate Russia. Like, we don't like Iran, but we really hate Russia. So, I mean, they got that going for them. They're just right there. Look at all the Russians. Right
help
there.
Help us. Come back. Come.
Don't you remember Red Dawn, 1980s? Like, come on, the Russians are bad, right? Don't you want to continue to attack them?
So Zelensky may actually, I mean, we may come back if they switch the bombs out for cookies. I'm there, right? Okay. Yeah. You might want to consider that, because not only that, Israel's getting everything that he's asked for, U.S. firepower. So to make another Friends reference, Ukraine is Jennifer Aniston. Israel is Angelina Jolie. See what I'm saying there? Okay, enough of that. So here's what he said this weekend about the U.S. helping shoot down missiles for Israel. He says, the whole world saw that Israel was not alone in this defense. The threat in the sky was also being eliminated by its allies. And when Ukraine says that its allies should not turn a blind eye to Russian missiles and drones, it means action is needed, a bold one. It's not rhetoric that protects the sky. It is not opinions that curb the production of missiles and drones for terror, he added. So basically, U.S., I see you. You're cheating on me in public. In the absence of direct involvement, Ukraine is now begging for scraps. Here's what Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said this weekend. Even if you can't act the way you act in Israel, I know I'm not your main squeeze. Right? I'm your mistress, but still give us what we need and we'll do the rest of the job. It's a fair question, though. Given that the U.S. supports Ukraine and Israel, why does one war require direct involvement and the other doesn't? Well, here is what U.S. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby told reporters on Monday. He says that the U.S. will not take a combat role in Ukraine. Here's how he explains the difference.
If the U.S. can and allies can help shoot down Iranian drones over Israel, why can't they do the same over Ukraine?
Yeah, I knew this question was coming too. Look, different conflicts. Different conflicts, different airspace, different threat picture.
It's different. It's just different.
Different strokes.
In other words, the Russians are there, and we've got bases all around through the Middle East. So we have, you know, we have different bases, and, mm-hmm. and we can't really actually.
What I like is
no,
he,
I can't.
He knew that
give you an
he knew
answer.
That question was coming, but he didn't do his homework to give a proper answer.
Right,
he's like,
exactly.
Oh, I knew this question was coming, but different.
It's just different.
I knew this ignorant question was coming. Yeah, you knew it was coming because it was asked of you three times on the Sunday shows, by the way. Like, mm-hmm. It was asked of you multiple times by George Stephanopoulos and everyone else about the conflict. Also, one of the questions was asked was, why you guys told Iran not to attack, and they did anyway. So what does that mean for the White House? Mm-hmm. And they couldn't answer that question either. There's a lot of unanswered questions over the past 48 hours.
Yes, indeed. So now you know from that brilliant video clip that Ukraine is not Israel. They're different countries.
Got it.
Did you learn that?
Got it.
Okay. Now, of course, it is inconsistent foreign policy, but only a fool would expect consistent U.S. foreign policy. And Zelensky is clearly that fool. If he wasn't, he would have made good on the peace terms he agreed to 2 years ago. People wouldn't have had to die since. So imagine you're a Zelensky. You have a peace deal. That would mean no one else dies. No one else in the Donbas gets attacked by your own country that had been attacking that region since 2014. You give up land that doesn't want you anyway, and you rebuild your economy. But he doesn't do that because the U.S. promises, hey, you're going to be a national hero. You're going to go down in the history books like Churchill if you agree to this. But then the cameras get turned off, they go away, and you're left on a losing battlefield and a population that's either dead or hates you. That's what he's got right now. So yes, he is a fool. Can you see it any other way? If so, let me know. Let's just go over what Zelensky could have done if he wasn't a narcissist and cared about saving people. Okay, let's just review this. Let's see, he could have not ordered an attack on Crimea. In 2022, because when he did that, that prompted the mayors of the regions in the Donbas, this contested area, the Donbas has been attacked by the Ukrainian army since 2014, when Zelensky took office in 2019, he could have done something about it and stopped it. He didn't. When the mayors of the Donbas region asked Russia to come in and protect them in 2022, Zelensky could have not thrown innocent lives up against the Russian wall in order to get back the people that they were torturing. That's one thing he could have done. When peace talks were held in Istanbul in the spring of 2022, he could have held up those agreements. He could have, which did lead to a withdrawal of troops from Kiev that would have allowed the people of the Donbas to live peacefully, to join Russia as they had asked and voted to. Instead, Zelensky swallowed a load of garbage from the West, saying that they're going to continue to help them get that land back. They have not done that. They have not come even close. They've only allowed Zelensky's delusions to lead an untrained army of soldiers to their deaths. And let's remind ourselves how that is going, because we're now almost a year past the counteroffensive that we were promised last year, that Ukraine was going to go in and take all that land back. Here's where they started, June 1st, 2023, when we're told the counteroffensive started. Here's where they were today. They have not taken land back, not at all, nor should they get that land back and go back to being able to torture the people in those regions. They have earned only death on their side and now silence. So yeah, Zelensky is a murderous fool, and I feel no sympathy for his, sadness and the fact that he's feeling unpopular and Napoleonic. No, I don't. But here now is what the media is warning is happening, because the U.S. is just not opening its wallet and giving more money to Ukraine right now. Here's from RT today saying Ukrainians are beginning to dislike the U.S. They don't like us.
Imagine that.
Raise your hand if you care. Now, absolutely, I care that Ukrainians get to live. I don't care if they like me or not as an American. If they dislike American government, hey, we're the same. We got that in common, right? My government should never have led yours into war. But it's almost as if they appealed to our American sensibilities to be liked when the war happened. Like, hey, you put Ukrainian flags all over your profiles and your trucks and in your cities and American cities. Ukrainians love that. They respect Americans. They see what you are the savior of this story. But now look, you didn't open your wallet. They don't like you anymore. So that's how they're appealing to our sort of base need to be liked. So raise your hand if you care.
I watched a little mini documentary yesterday that showed the PR campaign that was to construct Zelensky in a way that people would like him more. So it was like picking the t-shirt and had to be green and why he had to have like this whole campaign to make him more relatable to the average person. And it was a complete PR thing.
Of course it was.
The green suit.
And of course, yeah, the green suit, the t-shirt,
everything
in the bunker.
That he does, everything about him.
And he's been on US TV. So this afternoon, he went on PBS, the news hour, Zelensky did. So he's getting very, very, what's the word I'm looking
B-level for? B-level media now?
Yeah, but desperate. And according to, this is the reporting from Moon of Alabama, which has been phenomenal throughout this entire conflict. The Ukrainian President Zelensky is lobbying Congress through U.S. media now for more weapons and monetary support. It requires him to finally depict the situation as dire as it is, they say. So he went on PBS NewsHour this afternoon and told them, I'll give you a very, they asked him how dire the circumstances are for the critical defense systems there. And he says, I'll give you a very simple example, he said. 11 missiles were launched towards the thermonuclear station, the thermal power station, upon which the electricity supplied in the Kiev region depends. We managed to intercept the first 7, but the remaining 4 hit the power plant. Why? Because we had 0 missiles left. We have exhausted all missiles that were defending this power plant, he said. So basically saying, without anything being sent from the U.S. anymore, we're done. We're over. And before, it was always like, we're winning, we're doing great. So see how this has all changed now, the rhetoric?
He just told the media that Ukrainian deaths were oversold and that they were winning a month ago.
The idea, though, in the beginning was, we're doing phenomenally, so you should be happy about all of the weapons you're sending. We're winning, right?
Right.
And we're winning, and all of the propaganda out there about us losing is just, that's all it is. It's propaganda. We're beating Russia. And now, of course, we all knew that that was a lie from the very beginning. And anybody who's watched our show, we've exposed those lies. But now they have to completely flip the script. So now they have to admit, we're dying here. We have nothing left.
Yeah.
So, which was always how it was going to go. And now they're having to finally tell the truth. Now we'll see if Congress approves this aid package, which looks like Speaker Johnson is going to do for Ukraine.
Not peace, guys, which could end it today.
But what's another $60 billion going to do in Ukraine? Nothing. You could shoot down a few more missiles. You could have a few more Patriot battery systems that by the time they actually get there, you'll be done anyway. Like, what is the point other than American taxpayers are footing the bill for
ridiculousness? No, you're right, because some of those weapons that were approved earlier this year, they said, great, we'll start making them. And you'll get them later this year.
You'll get them in 2027.
Yeah, go ahead, Philip.
Well, the thing is, like, until this line changes, like, is $60 billion going to push all that red out of there? No. So then what is the point?
Right.
What is this? All you're doing is extending a stalemate. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Well, the point is the military-industrial complex can exhaust all of its resources, can push out all its old stock, and then Raytheon and Northrop Grumman can build new ones at taxpayer expense, and those stock values go up, and they continue to make great money. That's follow the money in all of this.
Right. It's not for us. So, I apologize to all Americans, though. It's making us unpopular. Well, I don't think we're that popular anyway.
No, we are anti-war, and we do not want this conflict to continue. So we've got more news to get to, though, on this Tuesday. We're going to look. Is Klaus Schwab dead? Those rumors have been circulating over the past 48 hours. Did he rush to a hospital? Has he already died? Are they lying to us? What is the update on the World Economic Forum? And beyond just Klaus Schwab, what is the future of the WEF? Who is going to run this? Turns out, well, I won't tell you. I'll tell you in a second. How about that? And we're also going to look at
Canadian hate science, how it's bled across the border. It's been exported, if you will. What does that mean for Americans? What are they going to do with that hate science? Because that hate science was used to lock down and put vaccine mandates on Canadians. Will it be used similarly for Americans? Hold on to that.
Yeah. So let's get to the Klaus Schwab thing here in a second.
I can't wait.
Before, I just want to say thank you to everyone. We mentioned in the newsletter today, over the past 28 days, over 25 million of you have watched our show. And so we're thrilled about the record-breaking numbers of you guys joining us here on Redacted. I can't even imagine. Can you imagine CNN getting 25 million views on some of their crappy shows?
No.
It's unbelievable to me. So thank you guys so much. It just means we're all, you know, we're here. We don't have an agenda. We're seeking the truth. We have a small team. Really, it's like six of us on this team, and that's it. We're not paid for by billionaires. We don't have a staff like the Daily Wire does of like thousands of people. It's just a small staff, and we work really hard to bring you a great show every night. So 25 million of you watching across
all
platforms. So thank
you. We study really hard to deserve you, and we listen to what you say. So if you ever feel like we're not doing that, let us know. We really aim to be worthy of your time.
Yeah, we don't hit home runs all the time, but we try our damnedest to bring you news that the mainstream media is ignoring or is spinning. So we try to cut through it all here on the show. But anyway, thank you. I just wanted to say thank you. Okay, let's get into this. Is World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab dead? Well, rumors circulating online that Schwab was rushed to the hospital over the weekend, of course. Others saying he's been dead already. Others saying, of course, you know, online that he's been dead for years and it's just his head on an animatronic body or something like that.
Or it's one of the clones.
Yeah, it's one of the Klaus Schwab clones.
That's dead.
Yeah, but anyway, so these rumors were swirling. It's apparently it was tracked back to a satirical website and then it blew up online. And then don't worry though, he's not dead. Just don't worry about it. He is not dead. He is perfectly fine. Just doing fine, according to the Associated Press. Because if anyone's going to get an answer, it's going to be the Associated Press, which of course is a mouthpiece of the deep state. So a World Economic Forum spokesperson told the Associated Press that the claims are untrue as to his untimely death. Phew. Thank God. I was not sleeping well last night.
Untimely. He's like 90.
You heard me. I kept getting up last night. I was really worried about
it. Oh, is that
why? It was either that or I had to pee.
Mm-hmm.
So it was either I was worried about Klaus Schwab or I had to pee.
if something happened to him and we had to live in this like hellscape world of like being able to freely go where we wanted to go and eat what we want to eat and somebody not like probing our thoughts while we were at work. I mean, that's
you could eat real meat.
Frightening.
I know that that is a hellscape.
I don't want that.
You could live in a 16-minute city instead of a 15-minute city. So the story, we really dodged a bullet here. Let's be honest. Yeah, this guy's still alive. So the story comes, though, just weeks after their annual meeting where Schwab declared the World Economic Forum the trustees of the world. They run the show, he admitted publicly. They're the ones running everything, not the elected governments. We are the trustees of the world here at the World Economic Forum.
As trustees of the future, we are responsible for advancing a world which is richer in possibilities, more equitable in opportunities, and more secure in its foundations. Moreover, as leaders in government, business, and society, we bear a particular responsibility to rebuild trust in how we assume our own role as trustees.
So, yes, they run the world. But his fake death scenario, though, raises some serious questions as to who's next in line with this unelected body that runs the world. Who will run the world when Schwab does actually die? Well, it turns out Politico's playbook journalists have been asking the very same thing, and they did quite a deep dive on this. Surprisingly, Politico looked deeply at this, the race to replace Klaus Schwab. So in January of last year, Politico interviewed over 20 different sources, almost 30, 29 different sources, inside and outside the World Economic Forum. And apparently, they're all concerned about Schwab's impending death. It's an interesting take on this. So Playbook spoke with 29 sources, including WEF corporate strategic partners, current and former staffers, members of the forum's committees, communities, nearly all of whom feared repercussions from talking to us. And many said Schwab is treating a global organization like a family heirloom. WEF strategic partners say they're getting antsy. Longtime current and former staffers say it's impossible to know what will happen and therefore harder to plan a career. Schwab has a God complex, they say, and thinks he's in the fittest 0.1% in the world. But no one is immortal, said one U.S.-based veteran of the Davos conferences, adding, it's insane they don't have a succession plan in place. So apparently, though, they want to keep this all in the family. So if you're thinking, oh, well, Justin Trudeau take over, he's one of the young, you know, Schwab proteges. Will Jacinda Ardern, formerly of New Zealand, take over? Will Mark Rutte of the Netherlands take over?
No, he's going to NATO. He's going to go ahead.
He's going to NATO. So who's going to take over? But apparently it's going to be kept in the family. And WEF's head of media, Jan Zoff, what's your name? Jan Zoff insisted it's the WEF's board of trustees who will decide on a successor for Schwab. But the statutes also guarantee that it's the Schwab family seats at the table via Klaus, or at least one member of his immediate family. Schwab's daughter Nicole is a trustee. His son Olivier is a member of the managing board. His wife Hilde runs a foundation connected to the World Economic Forum. The Schwabs also hold a veto over whether the WEF can be shut down. So the Schwab family will retain control.
Wait, what? They can't even shut it down without their...
No.
There's no kill switch?
There's no kill switch. They have complete control. Isn't this amazing? They have complete control of it. So the Schwab family will retain control. It's too powerful to turn over to the board or other trustees. Meanwhile, something curious is happening at the World Economic Forum. On policy, Klaus Schwab and the WEF over the past few months have been pushing AI incredibly strong. Over the past few months, we've noticed a trend at the WEF. They're really pushing artificial intelligence. So we've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole trying to look back and understand why are they trying to push all of this so hard? Like, what is the connection here? What are the pieces that are adding up? And back in 2021, they launched this, the World Economic Forum launching the new global initiative to advance the promise of responsible artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Responsible artificial intelligence could contribute over $14 trillion to the global economy. Of course, so follow the money. But also bringing together hundreds of companies, governments, civil society organizations, academic institutions to accelerate the adoption of AI in the global public interest. Members of the alliance will work together to identify and implement the best available tools and practices for using AI ethically and maximizing its benefits to all of its members of society. Maximizing its benefits? What could maximizing its benefits be? Oh, well, they do tell us. One of which is to make sure that companies could save a boatload of money by getting rid of an entire workforce so it could be replaced by artificial intelligence. So keeping people at home, right? The idea is we don't want you to work. We want you to stay home. We want you to live in your 15-minute city. So one of their big pieces of this is getting rid of employment and offshoring it. Additionally, in addition to this, it's also combating misinformation and disinformation, right? If we can have all of these companies relying on AI to target and go after, you know, like the thought police, right? To go after what you're thinking, we can integrate this into all of our companies and into civil society and into our governments so that we will have AI out there searching and making sure that you're safe and making sure that your thoughts are not being manipulated. Make sure your speech is World Economic Forum approved, right? So here's their AI promise that they write about right on their website. AI holds the promise of making organizations 40% more efficient by 2035 by unlocking an estimated $14 trillion in new economic value. So that means when you say more efficient, what do you think that means? That means laying people off, right? That means cutting the fat. That means replacing jobs with AI. That's exactly what it means. And also at the end of this little piece here on your screen, it says this new initiative, the multi-stakeholder collaboration platform designed to accelerate the development and adoption of such tools globally in industry sectors. The alliance brings together over 100 different leading companies, government and organizations, nonprofits, and academics united in their commitment to maximizing AI's societal benefits while minimizing its risk. So one way that we now see this rolling out is sort of they're hiding how nefarious AI can actually be. And Amazon caught red-handed doing exactly that. So they're following the World Economic Forum's plan, which is to lay off individuals under the auspices of AI and then offshore these jobs to India. So this was an amazing story this week. Amazon has their just walk out policy. Have you guys are up in Washington State. Have you guys gone to one of these Amazon Fresh stores where you just walk out? And the way that it works, apparently it uses AI. That's the thing. It's using AI to scan you, right? So it was a cashierless tech in all these Fresh stores. And it was supposed to be sort of the cornerstone of their grocery strategy. Well, now they're phasing it out because, well, they found out that it's all fake. They were using fake AI. They said it was all AI. It's not. In fact, there were thousands of Indians, yes, in the country of India, they're not AI, they're literally watching you on cameras. There were all of these cameras on every friggin' angle, seeing what you're picking up and holding. You've got butter in your hand, and then there's an Indian going, that's butter, and then confirming it so that they're going to put the price in. It was not AI. It was Indians.
Hmm.
That's interesting.
I mean, that is actually, when I know AI could.
Go ahead.
The I could stand for Indian, you know, so.
There you go.
Like they had Whole Foods here, which Amazon, I believe, owns. And they closed some of those down, so I never saw one of those up here in this area. I'm sure there probably is one around, but I never saw one.
Mm. Go ahead, Philip.
Sorry, I was going to mention that because I several years back, I worked at an Amazon warehouse, and they actually had cameras on your workstation watching what you were putting away, and there were teams in India that were reviewing it. And so if, like, an alarm went off, they could come up and they would be like, well, they saw that you put this thing in the wrong place. And it was just like, there was like, you're being monitored by teams of people in India.
It's unbelievable. So yeah, this walkout tech that was supposed to be the future of AI.
In case you accidentally put something in your own pocket, that's what they're looking for?
No, it wasn't that. They had anti-theft cameras there too. No, it was literally for inventory management. Like if you put an item in the wrong bin, it would be lost. So they were actually watching where you would put things so that if you made a mistake, the computer would catch that you made a mistake. And it was somebody in India reviewing the footage to find out what mistake you made.
Oh, wow.
So as Catherine Austin Fitz writes or talks about, she says, this is all part of this AI scam because we're hearing this over and over and over again that we hear about AI, it's supposed to be our great savior, but then there's like thousands of people behind the scenes that have to come in and clean up the mess.
This you keep running into this with AI. It's not economic and it depends on thousands of people fixing the mess. Right. You know, and what the AI lovers will tell you is, oh, we're just working it out. We're working it out. We're working it out. But, yeah. I, you know, it's really funny because you now have these little Amazon Fresh places in airports. And I'll come through and I'll literally walk around to avoid them because they have the most creepy feeling. So, I can't explain it, but it's just like, ooh, creepy. And it wouldn't surprise me if part of that creepy family, you know, feeling came from the fact you got all these poor folks in India just watching us.
Poor them indeed.
I mean, they're like, oh, you're buying like an $8 thing of whatever. And I'm here in India making no money at all and basically starving.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not like, that fun to watch people shop unless it's those dudes who go around Costco and tell you what seed oils are in all the food. Then I can watch that all day.
That's what she does watch all day. So I'll just get you out of here on this story, which is that AI also, this idea, the promise of AI is that we'll add 1 million tons of copper into the mix by 2030. And the amount of environmental waste that goes into doing this is exactly the opposite of what the World Economic Forum touts, right? They're, of course, they're climate alarmists. They want us to live a certain way. They're telling you how to live. And they're pushing AI in the biggest way possible, but they're not talking about the side effects and the spillover effects of AI and how demanding it is. Having to build all of these massive data centers, so you're driving around, you have to just, it's all it is a data center just for AI. Just so Indians can watch what we're buying at an Amazon store.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is one of the big pieces, cardinal pieces right now of the World Economic Forum. As they move into the next year, the next 2 years, this is a big piece. So whoever takes over for Klaus Schwab, this is going to be a big piece of their strategy going into the next decade or so.
Terrifying. Okay, well, let us know what you think of that. We have more news to get to. We're going to talk next about Canadian hate science, how it has come across the border into the United States. An American journal says, we like hate science. We'll publish that. And then what do you think your politicians will do? Remember, this is the study that was used to torture the unvaccinated in Canada. Will it now be used in the United States? We're going to talk to Regina Watil. She's the author of Fisman's Fraud. She is the woman who will not let this study go because it affected her children. You mess with my kids, you're going to see what I can do. So she took to writing an awesome book, and we're going to talk to her in just a minute. But before we do, you might want to pour yourself a cup of coffee because you need to be awake for this, and we want to introduce you to 1775 Coffee because this is coffee with a revolutionary spirit. It's going to wake your butt up if you're feeling a little sleepy. In 1775, the world awakened to a new era, and that is the spirit that 1775 Coffee wanted to bring you with this coffee. It's coffee created with a precision and passion. Their beans are ethically and exclusively sourced from the finest coffee farms of Bolivia. 1775 Coffee Company's farm-to-cup journey ensures the highest quality, authenticity, and sustainability from start to finish. So with each sip, your palate will recognize, appreciate the dedication and passion that goes into crafting this single-sourced brew. Single source, guys, is the new way to shop, right? So that's a big catchphrase for olive oil. If you realize like, oh, my olive oil comes from three different countries, it's probably pretty bastardized. That's not good stuff. Same thing with coffee. One farm, one place, single source, you're going to get the best coffee. So if you hadn't already noticed, single sourced is the way to shop. So that's what you'll find with 1775 Coffee. So go to 1775coffee.com/redacted. Type in the numbers 1775 coffee.com/redacted. Use our code redacted for 10% off your checkout at order. One more time, that's 1775coffee/redacted. Canadian hate science is coming to the U.S. Get ready for that, Americans. Well, what do I mean by this? Canada, during the pandemic, funded a totally crazy bonkers study showing that the unvaccinated were a public harm to the vaccinated. So the unvaccinated, according to this paper, should be put in lockdowns and subject to vaccine mandates. This was based on a delusional math model, not real-world data, which at the time that this paper was published showed that the opposite was true. This is called the Fisman study. We've been talking about it for weeks. Well, data scientist and pissed off mother Regina Watil took this paper to task in her book called Fisman's Fraud, which has become an international bestseller. She came on Redacted in January, you may recall, and since then, the paper and its authors are all now being investigated in the House of Commons. But that has not stopped its author from just pushing out more nonsense. We spoke to Regina a few weeks ago about a new Fisman paper using, again, nonsense models, this time to show that masks were super effective at stopping the transmission of COVID, even though real-world data shows the opposite. And now this guy is back. He had the nerve to update the original paper about the unvaccinated to now claim that merely hanging out with unvaccinated people increases the risk to vaccinated people. Now, how can anyone say this with a straight face, much less try to publish this in academic journals? Why is he getting away with this? And why now is he trying to publish this in America? We're going to ask the author, Regina Watil. She joins us now. Regina, thanks so much for coming back on Redacted. It's a pleasure to see you again. So give us a background one more time for those of us who may not have seen your original pieces here on Redacted, what the Fisman study is and why it's so infuriating and what's wrong with it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having back on Redacted, Natalie. I really appreciate this opportunity. Once again, Fisman, he does update his model, and once again, he doubles down on the falsehood that the unvaccinated pose a disproportionate risk to others. So the original study received a lot of criticism here in Canada for three main reasons. The first reason was that it was a textbook case of scientific fraud. So what the researchers did in the original study is they concocted a model to simulate fake data that was opposite of real-world data. And then they tried to pass off this fake data and results as fact, as a true reflection of what happened in Ontario during the Omicron wave. So that was scientific fraud. The second big criticism was the model itself. The researchers developed a very simple deterministic model where the outputs were completely determined by a couple of pro-vax assumptions made by the researchers. So namely, the researchers assumed that the baseline immunity for unvaccinated Canadians, or unvaccinated people in general, was only 20%, and they assumed a vaccine effectiveness of 40 to 80%. And those two simple assumptions just gave them the results that they wanted.
Right.
And then
we don't see that now. That's never played out with the actual data that we have right now.
No, not even close.
Yeah.
And then the third criticism was that the original study was used to scapegoat unvaccinated Canadians. So if you recall, Natalie, the original study was published at a time when the Trudeau's vaccine mandates and travel restrictions were still at play, and he was desperately trying to cling to them when everyone else in the world pretty much dropped their restrictions because Omicron showed that the vaccines did not reduce transmission. So the original study was used to prop up the mandates and to vilify the unvaccinated, to blame them for disease transmission, and to portray them as selfish, reckless individuals who needlessly put others at risk. So those were the three main issues with the original study. So what this update does is it seeks to legitimize the original study and the findings. It seeks to legitimize the notion that unvaccinated pose a disproportionate risk to others. And it does so by basically giving the original study a superficial facelift. So you can dress up the original study, you can put lipstick on it, but you still can't take it dancing. In that, okay. this study should not be entertained. It should be nipped in the bud.
One of the things you write about in your book is that original versions of the paper did not try to extrapolate the model to actual people. In fact, they used a different word. They didn't even use the word people until the third version that was actually published. And then they just littered the paper with people all over the place. So originally they never meant to actually apply this to human beings. It was only a model. And now they're really pushing the fact that, oh yes, this is human experience. It's almost laughable.
It is. You're right. They littered it, I think, something like 76 times they mentioned people in the original study. And this study mentions people, I think, about 56 times. So they still litter it with people. And this update still does not use real-world people. It still does not use real-world data. But the researchers are a little bit more ambiguous as to what they're modeling and where. And for example, in the original study, they were modeling Ontario, the province of Ontario. In this new study, they say they are modeling a province in Canada, but they don't say which province. It just happens to have the same population size as the adult population in Ontario.
Utopia.
And in the
what they want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then it's in the first model, they said Omicron. In this one, you'll notice they say an Omicron-like virus. So they do seem to be a little bit more ambiguous in this update.
Okay.
And one of the main updates to this model is in the previous model, a main criticism was that it didn't incorporate waning immunity. So in this updated version, instead of modeling the Omicron wave, they actually model the Omicron decade. They go out 10 years, and they assume that people will boost every 2 to 24 months for 10 years to top up their immunity. So,
wow.
So it's a whole, yeah.
Okay, if we could just use this, because this paper was used to hurt people in real life. So could you then say that this is a model for what the Canadian government wants to happen, which is every 24-month vaccination?
Well, it's pretty ominous, right? Like 10 years and continual boosting. What I believe is happening here is that this is more of a scientific placeholder for when they can use it in the future. So in the last run, they were trying to maintain the mandates. So there was a lot of fanfare. There was a lot of rhetoric. There was a media circus. That did not happen this time. Fisman did not go on tour comparing unvaccinated people to syphilis carriers and intoxicated drivers like he did last time. So it looks like they're trying to legitimize the original study and so that they can use that result to bring in passports later. Because the mandates and passports have been suspended here, but Trudeau made it very clear that they can come back at any time if the opportunity presents itself. So I think that's how it's being used.
So was this republished in the same journal as before, and the same journal has no problem with these obviously hateful methodologies?
No, it was not published in the same journal. Actually, my understanding is they had trouble publishing it here in Canada. So the original study they did, there was the institutions that were involved were not interested in retracting the study. They wanted to keep that study, but they allowed that study to spread to the United States. So this updated version is now in a U.S. journal. And there's several interesting things with what is not in this paper, a few things I didn't find. So a second issue with the original study was they assumed a baseline immunity from vaccinated of 20%. When you look at this paper, they don't mention what the baseline is for the unvaccinated for immunity at all. It's not in the paper, it's not in the table. But when I download the Excel spreadsheet, I see that they actually used a value of 0%. They actually lowered it. So,
wow.
Yeah. And what else I didn't see in this paper is I did not see a declaration of the funding, and I did not see a declaration of the competing interests.
Right, so which was in the original paper, showed that they, that there was, it was Moderna, right? Was one of their backers.
Well, it was funded by the Canadian government through CIHR, the Canadian Institute of Health Research. But David Fisman has a lot of ties to pharmaceutical industries. So he has ties to Pfizer, he has ties to AstraZeneca, he has ties to others. And it's University of Toronto where he works that has a huge partnership with Moderna.
That's right.
So they have that. But this is not mentioned, somehow it's not mentioned in this American version. So I found that shocking.
Do you have any sway in American academia to say, hey, this paper doesn't fly? Have you written to the new journal that's hosting it?
Well, I am writing right now to the journal. There is a lot wrong with the updated version, so I am giving them a bit of a history of what the original is, because this study says, oh, it validates the original, so I have to address that, and I'm addressing all the new issues. So I will be writing to the PLOS One, I think that's PLOS One. So yeah, American Journal, and it's very troubling, Natalie, because as you know, that David Fisman did not receive any negative consequences to the scientific fraud that he has published here, and instead he now leads the modeling unit in the new Institute for Pandemics, and they seek to be a global leader in how the world responds to future pandemics. And so to be a global leader, you need U.S. buy-in. And it looks like the U.S., he is getting an audience, and that there are institutions that are very receptive to his pandemic work.
Good gracious. Well, why don't you give us an update on the investigation in the House of Commons around this paper then, because maybe that will at least slow him down.
Right. So my book was actually mentioned in the House of Commons, and a Conservative MP stood up and asked the Liberal government about funding this fraudulent study. And in response, it was shocking. A Trudeau Liberal stood up and basically called the Conservative a mega alt-right Conservative.
Right.
And and then the Liberal MP doubled down on the lie that unvaccinated were a disproportionate risk to others, and actually said, thank goodness they were able to marginalize millions of Canadians during the pandemic. So they are not backing down from their stance. But they are getting some blowback from the opposition here. And the opposition also came a second time asking about the federal government's involvement in the media frenzy that accompanied the first study. They asked whether there was a direct, they also asked if there was any direct influence or if they were involved at all in the research itself. And so far we haven't gotten a response to that.
Okay. All right. But it was requested. And is there a Canadian version of a subpoena that would force them to, or that's not on the table right now?
Well, the question regarding the whether there was direct involvement from the federal government, it was a paper order question, which means that they are supposed to respond to that question within 45 days. So we're hoping to have a response. They're obligated to give one.
Okay. All right. But we haven't seen anything yet.
No, we haven't seen anything. All we've seen is them doubling down on the lie so far.
Is there an American version of you that's saying, hey, get this paper out of our shores, too, that we can talk to?
Well, I really hope that people watching will write to the journal. I feel really bad for the Americans because, they may not be aware of the harm that the original caused here in Canada. And this second paper is a little bit, it's more disguised than the first one. The first one was very obvious. The first one here played out so badly, and we're still feeling the repercussions. So I'm really hoping that there is somebody fighting this in the United States. And like I said, I am writing to the journal, and I really hope others do as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that update. You can follow Regina Watil on X, as well as get her great book, Fisman's Fraud. And hopefully something comes of this, because there's been a lot of waves, but no actual apology or retraction, which is absolutely what people would like to see, I believe. So thanks again for coming on Redacted and telling us your story.
Well, thank you so much, Natalie. And we are seeing, you know, some improvement here. Like I said, the Canadian journals would not take this updated version. I'm sorry that it went to the United States.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You and me both, but we'll stay with it. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
That's going to do it for us today on Redacted. Thank you for joining us this Tuesday. It's a pleasure to see you. Hey, it's always a pleasure as well to get your comments on the Redacted newsletter. Don't forget that that exists. Please do sign up for the Redacted newsletter if you haven't already. You can find it at redacted.inc. We work really hard on it, and we really make sure that you get original sourced links to a lot of the stories we talk about in the show, because you don't have to think what we think. You should form your own opinion and do your own research. It's important to us that you do. So join the Redacted newsletter. You get all the studies and all the stories and all the links that we talk about on this show, plus more. We have more bits and bobs, more bits of news that might bring you joy, might make you smile, might want to share with your friends. So check it out, redacted.inc. Thanks again for being here. We will be here tomorrow, same time, same place. See everyone.